In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan Shot today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
9 seconds to play. The Texans trying to put this one on ice. Turpin, slot left. Second and 10 inside the Houston 27. Cooper Rush, shotgun. Handoff, Deuce Vaughn. Up the middle. Brought down inside the 20-yard line. Phillips and Hansen. And 2 seconds left. That's it. Game over. The Houston Texans blow out the Dallas Cowboys on the road. 34-10. They snap their two-game slide and build their record to 7-4 with the Titans at NRG Stadium up next.
Yeah, man. Today's a good day. The Texans go into Dallas last night. They go into Arlington. They dodge sheet metal before the game.
Oh,
that was an underhanded tactic, I would say, trying to hit Texans people with sheet metal before the game and blaming it on the wind. Air
nothing
quotes.
Like a little bit of negligent homicide as a pregame. Way to go, Jerry.
Yeah,
Jerry's falling house of sheet metal horrors to prove to be a little bit of a challenge there for the Texans in the first half.
The first half,
and,
yeah.
And then absolutely. Yeah, this was, boy. I think I'm in the same boat as a lot of Texans fans where we've been through this before. Hey, I'm going to enjoy this victory. There's a lot of questions that you have doubts about. Yeah. And the Cowboys are simply such a bad team that you can't really say, oh, yeah, we fixed this or we fixed that.
Right.
Hey, the Texans scored a second half touchdown. Yeah. Glory be.
Yeah.
At the very end of a blowout. But there are a lot of really good things left.
There are. There are. Yeah. Look, at its core, it's a 34-10 win over the Cowboys in Arlington. This, Seth, my comparison going into the postgame show last night, which feels like it was an hour ago, was a lot like the Patriots game in that it's close. It's literally a touchdown game at the half, like the Patriots game. You're feeling like, man, we left some things out on the field there in the first half, like the Patriots game. Like the Patriots game early in the second half, literally on the second play from scrimmage, Danielle Hunter gets a sack to kind of defuse a drive. In the Patriots game, it was an actual turnover. This was just a sack to put him in third and forever. But Danielle Hunter makes a play, and then you kind of get your legs under you a little bit. The defense starts to figure a few things out. Like Drake May did, Cooper Rush gets a bunch of meaningless yards throwing underneath. He threw for 354 yards, but it was less than 6.5 yards per attempt. He threw the ball 55 times last night. And then in the end, like the Patriots game, you get to check off a box that your franchise has never done before, winning in Arlington, the same way you never won in Gillette Stadium. So you beat up on a bad team. You won by 24 points. It's a hated rival. I'm not here, or at least early in the show, I'm not here for this text to the 5-Hour Energy fan line. Don't want to hear it that we got the W and kept their losing by 20 streak to 6. Bobby's play calling in the red zone on third. Folks. Not early. They beat the Cowboys in the second half like a drum. And I love that the fact that the defense, like they took advantage of some key injuries along the offensive line. You know, Tim Settle made Zach Martin look like an old man, and then he limped to the sidelines. And what happened? The crucial turnover that turned this game, the Derek Barnett scoop fumble touchdown, was because the Texans rushed over that right replacement guard and took advantage of a situation, and that's where the pressure came from. I'm excited about this win today. They're 7-4. You keep your lead in the division. And you got two, what should be, divisional cupcakes coming up for you here. Titans at home, Jacksonville on the road.
So when you look at it, I mean, just it's funny because there's going to be a broad spectrum. And, you know, yesterday somebody asked me, Seth, do you think the Texans are safe? Can they eke out three more wins? Like, listen, yes, they've got issues on offense. That's clear. You're not a football genius to point that out. But the, like, they just slugged it out with Detroit last week, and then they beat the game. Yes, they're going to win more games.
Yeah.
So it's all a question of, all right, no, you want to see, can they get to Super Bowl contender? I think that right now you're in a stretch of games now where you're really not going to find out until you start to hit the actual competitive teams. The really promising thing about last night was Nico Collins. Boy, I mean, how many yards would Nico have if it weren't for Laremy Tunsil? And if he had been able to scoop up that one at the end, that's a bigger if.
He had 54 yards on the game. The play that he, and obviously the world changes if that touchdown happens. The entire game looks different.
Yeah, yeah.
But that touchdown would have been 77 yards right out of the shoot.
Yeah.
Nico would have been in a spot where if he had scored that touchdown, the last two plays that he will have had for the Texans would have been a 67-yard bomb against the Bills and a 77-yard catch and run to open the game against the Cowboys.
I wonder if that's maybe what we should just start using him as, you know, given his hamstring issue. Just let him come in, get his big play.
Yeah.
Maybe Laremy Tunsil can stay stay within the invisible electric fence this time.
Yeah.
He's like, we need like one of those dog training devices,
the collars
for him or
something. And things.
Let him know when he's allowed to get out of his stance and where, how far past the line of scrimmage he's allowed to
go. It sounds like your take on Nico is similar to mine, which is, yeah, in the box score, he had four catches for 54 yards, which is easily his most pedestrian day that he's had statistically since coming back. And yet I feel phenomenal about how Nico Collins looked last. And it's not his fault that play didn't count. Like, he looked like Nico Collins last night.
On one of the third and longs that they tried to convert, where they threw one of the blessed screens, and Nico only got about 5 yards.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault. He ran into a sea of people. That was honestly more so than the first called back touchdown. He looked like he was shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
I thought it was one of the smaller guys at first. I kind of had to do a double take. Like, wait, I thought that was Nico. He looks more like Tank. So physically, I don't have any concerns about him. I haven't looked at the snap counts yet because he kind of went quiet for a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
And I think took a couple series off. So I don't know if they had him on a pitch count of some sort. But so far, so good with Nico's return.
At the end of the game, when they were up by, you know, however many touchdowns, when the game was clearly out of reach, they had Robert Woods and Xavier Hutchinson in there. They didn't even have Tank in there at the end of the game last night, which I'm totally cool with, by the way.
Micah Parsons trying to body slam Robert Woods.
Yep. Yep.
You're elder and a much smaller man, Micah.
Yeah.
Don't let the frustration turn you into that guy, man.
I liked the chippiness of this game. I liked that the Texans kind of dictated the chippiness of this game. Clint Sterner's observation was he thought that by the second half, the Cowboys just weren't into the Texans' physicality anymore on either side of
the
football. Like the Texans kind of made them tap out last night.
And I thought the special teams, they got into it right off the bat, which was fun.
Yeah.
But then the Cowboys, even in the first half, they were getting offended about getting hit.
Right.
It wasn't like dirty hits or anything. On the one punt return or the kick return, it was nobody did anything.
Right.
Kymie Fairbairn like almost hit you, and then an actual football player hit you.
Yeah.
Settle the hell down.
Yep.
Yeah, and then in the second half, Sean, the back-to-back series of Jalen Petrie just hurling himself against other human beings.
Yeah.
And in the first instance, the offensive lineman that he caused the fumble after
the
second fumble.
Guyton, rookie. Yeah.
He hit Guyton. I mean, that's just, I was trying
he knocked him out of the game, Seth. He didn't come back in after that play. Guyton,
oh, that was how Guyton went out?
Guyton went out on that play. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is Swarm, baby. I'm going to tell you right now, Petrie is a lock for the Circle of Swarm this week.
That second half was swarmy.
It was swarmy as hell.
It got really, they were out there. They were looking for the trophies of the day were kidneys and spleens.
Yeah, man.
They were just going to go out and just try to damage internal organs. That's just good old fashioned football fun.
This is a Super Bowl defense right now, right? Like, this is a defense you can absolutely go win a Super Bowl with.
I think that it's going to be one of those things where, because especially last night they were playing so much zone.
Yeah.
And look, they have to. They don't. I get it. I get people's frustration. And you're going to be frustrated when they're not getting a good pass rush. And in the first half, they weren't consistently getting a good enough pass rush. And there was also poor discipline on the perimeter at times.
Yeah.
And Yeah, it was when the Cowboys were able to have a couple scoring drives, it was really, really uncomfortable because it felt like you were bend, bend, break. They cleaned all that up in the second half. The injured offensive lineman helped for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
But they got more. First and foremost, you're going to play that much zone. Yeah, you got to get a four-man pass rush.
Yeah.
And that really started to click in the second half. And then you see the opportunistic big hitting side of what the Texans can be. The part to be optimistic about with there is that you didn't have Kymie Lassiter and you didn't have Will Anderson.
That's exactly
and that's what I'm saying.
Like, fully loaded, this is a Super Bowl defense.
Right, and that's a big if. These cornerbacks, the Texans cornerbacks, the two guys that start for you, they've missed some time, you know, this year and last year with Derek Stingley. And then with Lassiter back, then you can play more aggressively with coverages and blitzes. But I know it's frustrating and people get upset because, oh, you're just playing conservative versus a backup quarterback. Yeah, and you end up allowing 10 total points, which against any team in the NFL is a really good performance defensively.
Yeah, and you got better as the game went on. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Boy, these last couple games, you know, nationally televised games can do one of two things. Can either expose you or it can showcase you.
Yeah.
Boy, Derek Stingley Jr. has put together two really nice games in a row here if he's trying to become an all-pro or a pro bowler for the first time.
Oh, good call there,
he might have been the best player on the field last night, Derek Stingley Jr.
And almost in that way where the way he operates, it just looks like he's in complete and total command of his business.
Yes.
You know, like a certain spatial awareness. There's certain cornerbacks that throw out their 40 times or their verticals or any spectacular acrobatic plays they make. They just like they look like they command their entire space.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just in complete and total control, and they have such awareness of where the ball is and when it's going to arrive and all that. And it's really impressive. Yeah, he's really – he's been coming into his own, but it just does feel like he's operating at a different level.
Dude, the most impressive play I thought he had last night, and don't get me wrong, he had some really impressive plays on the ball. He probably could have had three interceptions in that game last night. He wound up with one. But that play that he made, I believe it was on a third down where they hit, he was ISO'd on CeeDee Lamb, and they hit CeeDee Lamb on that crosser, and he made the tackle short of the sticks, like closed on CeeDee Lamb. Like it was... It was an impressive tackle. It was impressive burst in short space to tackle. And CeeDee Lamb's a bigger guy, and he was able to bring him down to the ground. Like, I mean, Derek Stingley, they had some impressive, like Danielle Hunter in the second half of this game. If I'm watching that game, I haven't watched a lot of Texans this year, but I'm watching these nationally televised games. I'm watching going, okay, that Danielle Hunter signing. You know, free agency doesn't often work out. Sure as hell did with Danielle Hunter. He was excellent in that game last night.
Yeah, no, and he's another one who's just fun to watch because he doesn't. There's very few human beings that move the way he does. At his size, he's like Mario Williams size, but with a level of bend and athleticism, and just he's so technically skilled. He's just so smooth with his hands. He's a lot of fun to watch. The defense in general, is that a Super Bowl caliber defense? Yes. I don't know. Like they still have glitches here and there, and like I just the safety plays sometimes there's so many times where I can't figure out, like, all right, wait a second, was that really supposed to be like cover zero there, because that doesn't let it just there's a couple glitches still that they got to figure out, but the big playability and the ability to create turnovers and everything is just awesome.
Yeah, there's nothing fluky about it, man. Like this is a defense that has turned itself into a turnover machine here in the middle part of the season. So the Texans finish up three straight primetime games. That's it for the primetime games for the year. They've still got a couple big national games coming up with the Chiefs on a Saturday, the Ravens on Christmas Day. But if the nation just watched these three games of the Texans, what do we think their overall impressions are of this team? And how accurately do they reflect what this Texans team actually is? We'll talk about that a little bit more. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans as well in the next segment. His thoughts on how the team played last night. 34-10, the final score. The Texans beat the Cowboys, and we'll be digging into it all day long. Ross Tucker joins us at 7 o'clock here on a Victory Tuesday on Sports Radio 610. Stay there. I like that. I like a reaction Tuesday because it means the Texans played on Monday, and it means they're relevant. They're playing on Monday Night Football, man. We love that. And they win. They beat the Cowboys. First time on Monday Night Football, the Texans have been on Monday Night Football since the 2019 season. They get the win last night in Dallas. First time that they've beaten the Cowboys on the road in the history of the franchise. So, ding, check that box right there. We'll hear from J.J. Watt in just a little bit. He took a nice shot at the Cowboys on the Manning cast last night. But first, here's C.J. Stroud. Big talk this week had been, got to have fun, got to let it rip, got to cut it loose. Here was C.J. Stroud on all of those things last night.
For sure. Yeah, I've been having more fun for sure. And learning, you know, that this game ultimately isn't everything. You know, it's important. And, you know, I'm extremely blessed. You know, I'm blessed and highly favored from Jesus Christ himself to be able to play this game. Because I'm telling you, I'm not qualified, you know, but Jesus, he calls the unqualified to be qualified. So, I've been able to, you know, to learn not only from the game of football, from just X and O's, but just life. You know, you get knocked down 7 times, a righteous man gets up 8. So, you know, I've been able to kind of live that lifestyle a little bit more, you know, on and off the field, and, you know, been blessed to do that.
All right. Well, he's perfectly wired to go through whatever ups and downs this team has gone through over the last month or so, I would say. CJ?
I was reflecting on him saying the unqualified being called to be qualified. I feel like that's something he learned from Jack Easterby somewhere along the way.
God, I hope not.
Jack, how'd you get your job, Jack? I felt like I was called upon. I'm unqualified.
Qualified. They call me unqualified.
Yeah, I just, you know.
That's funny.
I'll tell you one thing. I would love to get to the point where we're not talking about whether or not guys are having fun. I'm not comfortable with any of this. I do think CJ is a guy that puts a lot of pressure on himself, and he's the opposite of Anthony Richardson. There's no chance in hell there was ever a thought that maybe we need to bench CJ because he doesn't take notes or something.
Right, right.
Yeah, like all the stuff that they said about Anthony Richardson. So that part of it is big. I mean, execution and actually being a powerful offense is a nice cure for a great way to have fun
football. What do you think about what the Texans put out there in these three nationally televised games? Let's face it, the nation, by and large, outside of Houston, has probably watched more Texans football in the last 3 weeks than they have maybe in, you know, maybe practically the entire D'Amico Ryans era, when you consider how little they were on national TV last year, aside from the postseason and the Week 18 game against the Colts. What do you think, like, this stretch where you rarely see a team playing three primetime games in a row on different days of the week? What do you think about what they put out there for the nation to see these last few weeks?
I think everybody's been kind of in a, they've had to pull back a little bit and table their opinions about the Texans as they watched other teams like the Lions really start to emerge. So that Lions game is where, if people are thinking about narratives or anything, I think that's where it became clear, and then the Lions game especially, but if you look at the Jets game, obviously, before that, and then even this victory last night, that the Texans are just in a tier below where the Lions are right now.
Yeah.
You know? And part of that might simply be Will Anderson, Kamari Lassiter, Nico Collins last week. Maybe it's as simple as that. I think it's more. I think there's more something systemically wrong with it. But I think nationally, and from what I've seen, people are really impressed with the defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, the defense catches your eye. You know, that's something that just, it jumps out at you. And then when you create as many turnovers as you did versus the Lions, I think that's what, I think most people are probably looking at it if they've only watched the Texans on national television and thought, well, boy, it was really weird that bad half they had versus the Jets. But other than that, they fly around, they force turnovers, they have huge hits, really good pass rush. That looks like a Super Bowl caliber defense.
Yeah, it's. There's a text. We're getting a ton of texts this morning. We appreciate everybody getting up with us this morning.
I can barely read this morning, everybody.
That's okay.
It's going to be all Sean.
I got the reading down. We're good. It's the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. Defense is legit. They're built long-term to win like KC does right now, but they still have some things to figure out. And I think you're in the neighborhood there, Texter. You know, where they, like, if this team, like, look, right now as constructed, if this is who they are, then I think they're perfectly capable of winning a home playoff game, which it looks there's like a 95% chance they're going to get here. Like, last night was a big step towards winning the division, because you still got all three of these division games that you should win on the schedule here. Like, it'll be a major disappointment if this team doesn't go into the bye week in a couple of weeks at 9-4 with the Titans at home and the Jags on the road coming up. if you're going to pull off an upset in the divisional round, though, because it looks like you're going to have to travel in the divisional round, it will be because of your defense. It'll be your defense winning the turnover battle, forcing some mistakes. That is how you're built right now. I guess the question is, whatever is ailing this team offensively, how... I don't think you can fully fix it this season, just because I think you just need better guys in certain spots.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But how much can you fix it with the guys that you have right now?
I don't know too as well as I mean. Look, there's the problem with the offensive line, and you know, kudos to them. The very first Joe Mixon touchdown, nice zone run, cutback, and they did a great job on that. It's when they get down into the red zone that you start to see the physicality just isn't there. But in the pass protection, I mean, this pressure up the gut, these mental errors and guys just being unaccounted for in the A-gap, the physical errors you can abide. The mental errors, I have no choice but to question how these guys are being coached, whether it's Chris Strausser or Bobby Slowick or whatever the hell's going on. I mean, Laremy Tunsil right out the gate. Now, look, Laremy is a serial offender. He's been a league leader in penalties.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who his coach is.
He's a top three in penalties. Yeah, I don't know. He might be the greatest of all time at committing penalties because he's a league leader almost every year. And he was in the lead last night, and he went into it and committed one. But some of the execution, as you know, they pointed out on the broadcast, and Andre did as well, that you know that you're running that play right from the get-go. And it wasn't egregiously downfield, but it was enough, like, on the first play of the game, and he was way more downfield than the other Texans offensive linemen were. It's just a sloppy inattention to detail by Laremy Tunsil. And it's like, he just goes into business for himself. Just flat out doesn't care. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
And it calls back a touchdown.
It does. It does. Now, I will say this on the, you know, like on the bright side, I did like the resiliency of the offense that they look, they, you get that penalty. Now you're first and 15 and they just took a touchdown from your returning superstar wide receiver play. They'd been working on all week, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
They got the right look and they don't get a touchdown. They do put the drive together and then block that play for Mixon on the 45-yard touchdown. So that they came back and still scored on that drive, I view as a major positive for this offense, as up and down as they've been this season.
Right, no, and it was, the fact that they scored twice on that drive.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of, there was a theme to it in the evening because on the turnover touchdown return, there were two fumbles on that. Yeah. The Texans took the ball away, and then they took the ball away again on the same play.
Yeah.
That was really good.
That was fun.
And Derek Burnett was the same guy doing it. The one thing I'd say about, it was awesome to see Nico score that touchdown right off the bat. And it's unfortunate that it was called back, but the penalty was totally relevant. Like, that was, you know, that's people get upset with a legal man downfield. As a defender, it's bogus when a guy gets away with being, because it looks like run, and it makes you, it just makes the play action work that much more effectively. Tunsil's a whole other category.
He is.
There's something systemically wrong with that offensive line. Those guys ain't right.
Yeah.
They just ain't right.
Right.
You know, like that, you know, just some groups of, you know, like the kids at your school that just, you know, they hang out in they're hanging out in the corner. They're wearing trench coats. They've got dastardly looks on there. Those kids ain't right.
Right.
That's what that O-line is. They just ain't right.
Well, I wish they were a little more dastardly. You know what I mean? If they were dastardly and mean, that might help things a little bit, you know?
They're crumb bums. They're not like future evil G. It's not like a bunch of little Lex Luthers running around. They're crumb bums.
Crumb bums. text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. Have y'all talked about the Mechie form tackle yet? No, we've not. He was part of the circle of swarm this week, Mechie, and then he got a chance to actually swarm in the game last night.
The Cowboys attempt a fake punt.
Tackle on a fake
was
punt.
Was it consecutive weeks or second time in
consecutive
3 weeks?
No, it was back-to-back weeks. Yeah, back-to-back
and failed again. Yeah. Boy, that's when it really felt like. You know what? I credit the Cowboys with coming back from that point and actually still trying to make a run of it and coming within. Because that felt like when the wheels really could have fallen off the wagon.
That was one of the times the Texans went for it on fourth down and they didn't get it there. So the Cowboys actually held there. Here was J.J. Watt on the Manning cast last night. One of the biggest stories coming out of this game had nothing to do with football. It was the fact that the Cowboys wanted to play with the roof open last night. So they opened the roof during the day, and apparently heavy winds took out some of the metal that the building is made out of, and a gigantic piece of sheet metal during the pregame came floating down to the field. And fortunately,
it came within inches of the carotid artery of a Texan staffer.
As far as we're concerned, that's what happened.
Inches can be multiple feet.
Sure.
But still, it was close enough.
No, it was definitely a number of inches that it came within. Here was J.J. Watt last night on the Manning Cast taking a shot at the Cowboys.
From that, it's not a bad thing.
That crowd shot in Dallas kind of says it all right there. They either left to avoid the falling ceiling panels, or the game's not going too well. And I think we know which it is.
Five games in a row at home that they've been down at some point by more than 20 points. That's not good. I think going six if you go back to the playoffs last year.
Eli, the statistician, chipping in with some numbers there at the end. Eli.
What a sad sack of just pathetic misery that entire franchise is.
I thought you were saying about the Manning Cast. I'm like, man, it's not my favorite either, but that is a harsh criticism.
No. That was good by JJ. That was a nice shot. It wasn't even a shot, really. I feared for everybody's safety.
Yeah.
Once I saw the video especially, and there's like, oh, that's – and I think some people – don't be fooled by the fact that it was kind of wafting down
the earth. It looked like a gigantic metal leaf.
That sheet metal will slice you open, Sean.
The edges catch you.
Sean, I am a YouTube-trained HVAC tech.
That is true.
And there's one thing I can tell you is that sheet metal will kill you dead. You got to be careful, man.
Dude, they
slice you open.
I get skittish anytime I see a video of anybody doing something from great heights. Watching that dude on the catwalk having to bolt that second piece of metal that looked like it was about to fall. Like, there was a second piece of sheet metal, for those who don't know, that if they didn't figure something out, they were going to postpone the game. So they had to bolt it to the roof at AT&T Stadium. And showing that guy on the catwalk, dude, I get the jelly legs so bad when I see people walking in places like that. Ugh, that's the worst. Payne and Pendergast with you. Good job, Texan fans, last night, by the way.
The Ernie Zampezi, I can't remember the end of the movie. He was the World War II POW. They were on a lifeboat for like 2 months and survived. That's why they found themselves in a lifeboat, because they were forced. They were like, hey, this thing's a death trap, this plane that they're about to fly out on, but they had to go on this rescue mission. So there's like barely flight worthy plane. That's how they had to fly out on. That's how I felt about that guy up in the rafters.
Yeah.
I was like, they got this guy just trying to patch this old jalopy together to try to make it through one game, and everybody's going to die because of it.
Thanks a lot,
Jerry Jones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They found him after the game. Somehow the cameras found Jerry Jones. He was available for comment.
I saw that. Yeah, that's really weird.
It's getting to the point where I might start feeling bad about making fun of Jerry, just because I couldn't understand a word he was saying.
Yeah, he's
I don't
old,
know if
man.
He was I he just it wasn't making he wasn't making any sense at
no,
all.
No. All right, let's get into headlines. We'll continue to dig into this Texans game. Ross Tucker joins us at the top of the hour. He's our Odyssey NFL insider. Rockets played last night as well. Minute Maid Park's got a new name. We got a lot to get to in headlines. It's coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
9 seconds to play. The Texans trying to put this one on ice. Turpin, slot left. 2nd and 10 inside the Houston 27. Cooper Rush, shotgun. Handoff, Deuce Vaughn. Up the middle, brought down inside the 20-yard line. Phillips and Hansen, and 2 seconds left. That's it. Game over. The Houston Texans blow out the Dallas Cowboys on the road, 34-10. They snap their two-game slide and build their record to 7-4 with the Titans at NRG Stadium up next.
Yeah, 7-4. Titans coming to town on Sunday. Jags after that, and then finally, a week 14 bye week for the Texans. That's what it looks like over the next couple weeks. How it looked last night. Close game at the half. Cowboys got the ball to start the second half. And then the Texans defense went to work in the second half in this game. They beat the Cowboys 34-10. They get off the schneid of their second half scoring, Seth. For a while, it looked like it was going to be the defense that got them off the schneid. But the offense did get the ball in the end zone towards the end of this game. That was nice to see. 34-10, the final score. The Texans beat the Cowboys.
I feel like there were way too many people that were way too eager to point out that it was a defensive touchdown in the second half. Like, I felt like it was the obvious thing that I feel like every Texans fan knew. Everybody knew the problem wasn't that the Texans team wasn't scoring touchdowns in the second half. It's that the offense isn't scoring. You need the offense to score touchdowns. But a lot of people were none too happy to jump out. Like, hey, everybody, that wasn't an offensive touchdown.
Right.
Thanks.
Right.
Thanks. I'm very aware of that.
Thanks for the well, actually, guy. Yeah, appreciate you.
Yeah, we'd have to wait until they were going to get that second half touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen a team more committed to getting done what needs to be done in a situation where you didn't actually really have to score a touchdown.
Yeah, dude.
If they hadn't gone for it on fourth down on that series, even with a healthy lead, I would have been angry. Like, no, at this point, you've got to get this bad juju out of your system, man.
Here's D'Amico Ryans after the game, Texans head coach. How good did it feel to come back into a winning locker room again?
Man, it's an awesome feeling, right? It's hard to win in this league. No matter who you're playing, it's hard to win, right? And, you know, it was a great feeling coming in, knowing we had it out there, and just seeing our guys, seeing a different bounce in their step, seeing a different look in their eye all week. Like, I just want our guys to remain focused, remain locked in, and locked in on the task at hand each and every week. And if we do that, we're a really good football team, right? And that's something we knew last week. We're a good football team. We can play with anybody. It's just about finishing.
Yeah, I tell you, like, just at its very basic core, Seth, as somebody who's sitting in a studio right now that has ESPN on the TV in here, and we've gone through three of these now, these nationally televised primetime games. When you're part of the nationally televised primetime game, if it is a relevant game, you will be you'll be part of the topic the next day. And it's not like they've played world beaters in all three of these games, but all three of these games have involved relevant football teams. The Jets, because of just the disaster they had been, and they fired their coach.
Yeah.
The Lions, because they're so good. And then the Cowboys, for similar reasons to the Jets. And so the Texans, for the last two games, have been on the wrong side of the story. It is nice to go look up at the TV screen in here and see Nico Collins on a catch and run that counted. You know, not the one that didn't count. You know, to see Joe Mixon getting into the end zone a few times. To see the people on the national broadcast debating whether or not this is a Texans team that can compete with some of the tippy top upper. I don't know what the answer is to that question. I think the answer is no right now if they were to play in a playoff game in Kansas City or something, but it's just nice to be on the right side of it.
Well, I'll tell you honestly, the biggest thing that I think that people have noticed in watching the Texans over the last 3 weeks is that there are a lot of people that will say in the pregames, on the halftime commentary, Troy Aikman last night, CJ just hasn't been himself accuracy-wise. Yeah. Like, there's two different buckets I kind of put into. There's some things where CJ has had a hard time operating because of the circumstances around him. But we've just seen too many instances now of throws that CJ used to make very simple. Like, hard throws that he would make look routine, but that he's misfiring on now. And it's really hard for me to look at that part of it and not wonder whether it's his hand injury or whatever. With, you know, quarterbacks are always injured all the time. It's just strange that a guy would be as accurate as he is, that has had as many misfires as he has had these last few weeks on some of the simple stuff. And I mean, is anybody going to be surprised if he is banged up? He's been hit more than anybody else in the league.
Well, he was banged. I mean, he played with a shoulder all last year that didn't show up on the injury report for most of the year. And I think, like, I don't know that there's a lot of people that know that CJ was on the injury report this week with a right hand injury, you know, because this week was all pushed back a day. By the time the second injury report's rolling around, everybody's off doing their stuff for the weekend. He was on the injury report with a right hand injury this past week.
And
he looked like someone at times who was throwing with a right hand injury last night.
Yeah, the QB injuries, it's always dicey because they're always injured anyway.
Sure.
So you never know exactly how serious it is or anything. And there's a lot of things that quarterbacks are going to play through a lot of injuries. So like they're not on the injury report sometimes because there's no chance of them missing with that injury. But I don't know. You know, because I can identify the times where CJ might be feeling like hurried, or he might not be trusting the pass protection or whatever it might be. But there's also other times where, man, this is pitch and catch. This is something that CJ usually makes it look like it's no big deal, and he's misfiring on him. That's concerning to me.
Yep, it should be.
It also leads to sometimes, like last week, on just not wanting to pull the trigger on Tank. You know, that little bit of hesitancy, it can seep into a quarterback's mind when they're injured.
Do you have a long-term concern about CJ, or do you feel more like this is a short-term thing?
Oh, no, that would be just, yeah, that's a short-term, oh, he's banged up. Yeah, it's not like, we already know that he's tough enough to, you know, play through the physical part of it, but sometimes if your body's not working right, your body's not working right.
Yep, Texans move to 7-4 on the season. They stay two games ahead of the Colts with the tiebreaker over the Colts. If the Texans take care of their business, this nets it all out right here for you. If the Texans take care of their business with their three division games remaining, two Titan games and a Jaguar game, the Colts would need to win out to win the division. So the Texans, they were 92% to make the playoffs yesterday. I'm guessing they're like 96% now to make the playoffs after last night is my guess, probably, right?
I think I'm still kind of freaked out by our listener who asked me before the pregame yesterday if I thought the Texans had it in them to eke out at least three more wins.
It's one person, Seth. It's one guy.
I know, but I want to get into his psychology because I do feel like I think sometimes if you don't really take in the league at large, you sometimes forget just how bad some teams are.
Of course.
And I think because people are rattled by that loss to the Jets, like that's just – You gotta step back sometimes and maybe just, you know, watch Red Zone or something.
Yeah.
Take in Sports Center for old time's sake. Just get a feel about just the rest of the league. Yeah, the Texans have been disappointing in a lot of ways, but they're by no means a bad football team.
No.
They're a frustrating football team.
Frustrating at times, for sure. 97%, by the way, according to playoffstatus.com, the Texans' chances of playing in the postseason this year. The Rockets, I've not checked their chances, but they... I would say they're pretty good, at least early on in the season here. Unfortunately, last night did not go as planned. Their five-game winning streak is over. I think you guys know, we're admitting, at least I am, that I didn't see a minute of this game last night because we were covering the Texans. But my sons watched it, and they texted me at a random time during the Texans game, like, oh, it's a heartbreaking loss for the Rockets. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. The Rockets lose 101-100 in Milwaukee to a Bucks team that is off to a really slow start this year by anybody's standards. They're 5-9. The Rockets still 10-5. A Damian Lillard layup with 3 seconds to go in the game provides the winning margin last night for the Bucks.
Fewest points of the season for the Rockets.
Mm.
They were after they had that was the second highest scoring game in the NBA so far this season. The night before at Chicago,
143 when they put up a buck 43. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Look, it's nothing. It's nice to have a loss like this and be like, oh yeah, you know what? Like, I don't have the doubts about the Rockets that I do about the Texans.
Yeah, which is
right
weird
this
to say.
Moment. Yeah. It's very early, everybody. But my goodness,
I'm just looking at the box score.
Been a machine.
I'm looking at the box score and I'm like, oh, I would have been frustrated watching this game. Fred VanVleet chunking up 11 threes, making three of them. Jalen Green, 9 of 24 from the field. Oh yeah. It was a good thing I was watching the Texans last night and not this Rockets game. I would have been very frustrated. New name unveiled for Minute Maid Park. All your memories are gone, people, from Minute Maid Park. They're erased.
No.
It is now Daikin Park. Yes, sorry. It's a new name for the park. There were some people reacting yesterday like they're changing the name of the park, but all my memories are of Minute Maid Park. It's the same stadium. It's just...
Yeah.
More money now. For
God bless advertising, though, too, because, no, honestly, like, Staples. Look at the Staples Center. It makes sense.
Yeah.
People are attached to that name.
Yeah.
They associate all of their fondest childhood memories with Staples.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. You wonder. I always doubted whether naming rights were worth it or not. Once I saw how up in arms people were in L.A. about Staples Center, it's worth every cent. Yep. No, everybody for generations will be buying their fax machines and copy paper at Staples.
Indeed.
Because of their memories, yes.
Laker fans for sure, yep.
There's going to be, that'll be like the last Blockbuster. There'll be one Staples remaining and it's definitely going to be in L.A.
A line of purple clad people out the door buying staplers and paper clips. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Tuesday, a victorious one, a special Reaction Monday on a Tuesday here on Sports Radio 610. Up next, we'll get Ross Tucker's thoughts on the Texans. He, like the rest of the world, has now seen the Texans in these three primetime games, particularly last night. We'll get his thoughts on where the Texans are at as they head into the back third of the season. Our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, joins us next.